Sometimes the most profitable practices are the worst practices to buy. I consistently get emails from dentists who have found dental practices that they think they might want to buy. And they come to me and say, hey, Chris, look how profitable this dentist was. The overhead is low, the income is high, his take-home pay is a significant number. Maybe the dentist is making $400,000, $500,000, $600,000, $700,000 a year. Absolutely, I want to buy this practice because yeah, I'm gonna have to pay back my loan. Maybe that's $150,000 a year. But the dentist before me was making $700,000 a year. If I subtract that $150,000, I'm still gonna be making $550,000. This is a great practice to buy, right? Obviously, if you are the owner of the practice, you want it to be as profitable as possible. That's the reason that you have a business, is that you're trying to make a profit. But when you are buying a business, you are not buying the seller. Now, if you are a DSO and your plan is to buy the practice and require the dentist to stay on for 5 years, which is what most DSOs do when they buy practices, they require the seller to stay on for a certain number of years, then maybe you do care about profit because you're actually going to be keeping the dentist there that was there before that was producing those profits. But if you are a solo dentist and you are planning on buying a practice, having the seller retire, and you are going to take it over, you want to look at things differently than just looking at profit. The seller's profit shows what they were able to make at this practice, not what you are going to be able to make. And sometimes the most profitable practices are actually some of the worst practices to buy, and some of the practices that are going to be the riskiest and going to have the highest potential for you to not be able to pay back that loan and still make a decent income. In other words, sometimes the most profitable practices are the worst practices to buy. Buying a dental practice is not like other investments. Let's say you want to buy an apartment complex. You decide you want to be a landlord and you want to buy an apartment. Buying an apartment is fairly straightforward. You're going to look at the building. You're going to look at how much the rents are in that area. You're going to look at what kind of repairs need to take place in order to maintain this building. You're going to then be able to figure out, what is your projected income if you buy this business? What are your projected expenses if you buy this business? And then when you subtract your expenses from your income, then you're going to be able to determine what is your expected profit from owning this business. And then you take that profit and you amortize it out over a certain amount of time, and you'll be able to figure out how profitable this business is going to be to own. Because when you buy an apartment, your expenses and your income is going to be fairly similar to whoever owned it before you. Maybe they run their business a little bit differently, but for the most part, running an apartment complex is a pretty standardized process. You're going to be taking over the same tenants who are going to be paying the same amount each month. Maybe you raise rent a little bit, maybe not. It's all up to your strategy. But for the most part, you're going to have a fairly decent idea of what the profitability of that business is going to be based upon what the profitability of the business was before you purchased it. When you buy a dental practice, on the other hand, you're not buying a business with a bunch of tenants that are paying a certain amount each month based on time. You are buying a business where the patients are going to be paying a certain amount based upon the amount of treatment that you are producing on those patients. This is completely different from a business like an apartment complex, where each month each tenant is going to pay a fixed amount per month. Maybe there's a few extra fees that are added on. If they have a cat, maybe there's an extra $30 a month. If they have a dog, maybe there's an extra fee. Maybe there's a garage area that they can rent out to add a little bit. But for the most part, you know exactly how much each person is going to be paying based on the business, based on the apartment complex. But when you buy a dental practice, the dental practice in no way determines how much money each patient is going to be paying into the future. That was determined by the way that the seller was treatment planning on those patients and his ability to convert those treatment plans into paying customers. When you come in into this business and take over for that seller, you are not going to be keeping the same treatment plan methodologies, and you're not gonna have the same level of skills of sales, et cetera, that other dentist had. Maybe you're gonna be better at those things, which is ideal, but maybe you're going to be worse, which can be a problem, because if you are going to produce less than the seller on the same number of patients, your revenue is going to go down. And if your expenses stay the same, but your revenue goes down, well, then your profit is going to go down. When you buy an apartment complex, the real estate is the asset that is generating the income. When you buy a dental practice, the dentist is the asset that is generating the income. And when you buy a dental practice, you generally are not going to get the dentist who was producing previously on that practice. The asset that you are buying when you buy a dental practice is you are buying access to patients. You could do a startup and you, the asset, the dentist, would be there at the startup, but the problem is you wouldn't have any patients at that startup unless you did a lot of marketing and spent a lot of money to get patients into that practice. But even then, depending on where you are in the country, it can be difficult to grow a practice in any decent amount of time. If you're in a really up and coming area, maybe you can get 400 to 500 patients, new patients per year. But in order to be profitable, you need something like 1,000 to 2,000 patients. So at a very minimum, it's going to take something like 2 years in order to become profitable at a startup. However, oftentimes it takes much longer than that. And far too often there are dentists that never become profitable when they do startups and they end up going out of business. I know multiple dentists in my town who have gone bankrupt trying to do startups. But I also know multiple dentists within 10 minutes driving from my house that are making more than $1 million this year. How are there dentists in the same town that are making more than $1 million and there's other dentists that are going bankrupt? There's really only two factors that go into how profitable a dental practice is. Number one, how many patients do you have? And number two, how much money can you produce per patient? Things like expenses are fairly fixed with dental practices. You're probably gonna be able to keep your overhead around 60%. Most dentists use the same supplies. There's a little bit of leeway with the types of labs you use, the type of equipment that you have at your office, the real estate, the number of staff you hire. But for the most part, dental practices are run in a pretty standard fashion. What really matters at a dental practice is how much you're able to produce and how many patients you have to produce on. So if you are buying a dental practice and you're not getting the dentist, you're not getting the one who was producing a certain amount per patient, the only thing you're actually getting from buying this practice is access to a certain number of patients. You are the one who's going to determine how much you can produce per patient. So when you buy a practice, you don't care about how profitable the seller was, because his profitability is going to be determined by both of those factors: how much he's able to produce per patient and how many patients there are. But when you take over the practice, the only thing you're keeping is how many patients there were, and then you are going to multiply that by how much you are able to produce per patient. If you find a practice that the dentist was making $700,000 per year, but only had 300 patients, and you take over that practice, you are then going to have to produce an enormous amount of dentistry on those 300 patients in order to maintain the profitability of the seller. However, on the other hand, if you can find a practice where the seller had 2,000 patients and was only making $200,000 a year, it's going to be extremely easy for you to come in and produce twice, three times as much as the seller per patient. And then you're going to be able to increase your revenue by 2 to 3 times. And if you don't increase your expenses relative to the revenue, you might increase profitability by 3 to 4 times. So now instead of making $200,000 a year, you might be making $600,000 to $800,000 a year. The reason you were able to do that is because you found a practice that had 2,000 patients, you came in and you were able to produce a decent number per patient. If, on the other hand, you buy a practice that only has 300 patients, you could produce the same amount of dentistry per patient that you were producing at that other practice. You're doing the same treatment plans. You're converting the same number of treatments into paid customers, yet you're making significantly less because you have fewer patients in order to do those treatment plans and that work on. If you think about patients as fuel, you want to find the dental practice that has the most fuel, the highest number of patients. You don't want to be looking at which dental practice had the biggest burn, the biggest flame previously, because that means that fuel is going to be burnt up. The other day, I went over to a friend's house and they were burning an old Christmas tree. It was like July and the tree was super dried out. You just put a little match on that thing and it was this huge flame, like flames are going everywhere. You had to stand like 30 feet back because it was so hot. But after that tree burnt out, there was like nothing left. The tree completely disintegrated to this little tiny pile of ash because it was so dry. It was such a potent fuel that it just burned right through. And within like 20 minutes, that tree was completely gone. It's actually kind of dangerous. That's how some people burn their houses down. So do not leave dry Christmas trees in your house. That's extremely dangerous because I have seen how those things burn. But trying to buy a dental practice because it was profitable is like trying to buy a Christmas tree because you saw how big the flame was. It makes no sense because that flame was so big, that means all that fuel has been burnt up. If you buy a dental practice simply because it was profitable in the previous year or the previous 2 years, the previous 3 years, that's not necessarily a good sign. Because if there were not that many patients, if there was not that much fuel, but the dentist burnt up all of that fuel, you're gonna come into the practice and you're gonna see Miss Jones, you're gonna see Miss Susie, Miss Kathy, Bob, whoever else is at the practice, all the patients, and they're gonna have 5, 6 brand new zirconia crowns. They're gonna just have finished some Invisalign to straighten out their lower anteriors. They're gonna have had veneers done. They're gonna have had implants placed. They're gonna have had all of their teeth fixed. All of the old amalgams were replaced with these brand new white zirconia crowns. All of the dental treatment has been done. It's all been taken care of. All of that fuel has been burnt up. You're gonna come into a practice and you're gonna have 300 recall patients that don't have any work that needs done for the next few years. Yeah, you might get an occasional chipped cracked tooth here or there, but for the most part, because the dentist was so thorough, because that dentist was doing such good treatment plans and doing such a good job at converting that treatment into sales, there's not gonna be any work left for you to do. That is why you don't want to buy a dental practice that is profitable. For some reason, bankers and accountants don't seem to understand this. Because I talk to bankers and accountants all the time. They say, oh, we looked at this practice with the client that you're working with, and we thought it was a great practice. It was super profitable. The dentist made $600,000 last year. We think this new dentist is gonna be able to come in and grow it. It's a great opportunity. And I'm looking at it and I'm saying, okay, so you looked at the profit and loss statements. Did you even look at the schedule? Did you even look at the production by procedure report? Do you even know how many active patients there are at this practice? And They're accountants, they're bankers. They don't even know what an active patient means. They don't even know what type of treatment is worth what. They don't know what's going on. They only are looking at the numbers, and they're looking at a dental office like it's an apartment complex. Like you're buying some sort of asset that has some sort of intrinsic value. When you buy a dental practice, you're not buying any type of asset that has any type of value. Yeah, you might be buying some old chairs. You might be buying an old pan machine, which you're probably gonna have to replace anyways because you're gonna wanna have a CBCT added in. You're really not buying anything of actual value when you're buying a dental practice. You're buying goodwill with the patients. You're basically buying the ability to have patients come to see you who were previously seeing another dentist. Really, there's no actual asset. It's called goodwill. And when you actually look at how much practices are valued, usually the most significant portion of the value goes to goodwill. And oftentimes things like assets are actually overvalued in the practice, like the equipment and supplies, et cetera, in order to benefit the seller for tax purposes. But in real life, you're just buying the goodwill. You're buying the patient base. Most dentists are going to be able to produce something like $700 to $1,000 per patient per year. The way you figure this out is you look at the total revenue and you divide it by the number of recall patients. Now notice I said number of recall patients, not number of active patients. Oftentimes practice brokers and sellers will send you a packet of information and they'll have a number called active patients listed there. And what it'll be is it'll say, well, we've had this many patients that have come in the last 24 months. That number is, while that number can be useful, that is not the actual number of patients that are still at the practice when you buy it. Think about all the patients that are gonna come in just because they have a toothache and they wanna get it fixed, or patients that have moved to another city, or they've gone to see another dentist, or they've died. Patients die, especially older patients. It happens. You don't want to look at how many patients were in there in the last 24 months. You want to look at how many patients are actively on the recall schedule, are actively seeing a hygienist right now. You don't care about some patient that just came because they had a toothache 24 months ago. So I would not look at that number that the seller or the practice broker gave you to say how many active patients there are at this practice, because that's not active patients. That is how many patients came in the last 24 months. Not the same thing. So I like to call it number of active recall patients. And there's really three ways that you can determine this active recall patient number. The first way, which is a lot more difficult and obviously not realistic, is you're going to stand in front of the dental office for 6 months and you're going to count how many patients come through the door. That's not realistic. You're not going to be able to do that. So what are you going to do then? You have two other options. The second best option, a little bit more difficult, but still the second best option, is to go and actually log into the computer system, look at the schedule, and actually count how many patients there were on the hygiene schedule for the last 6 months. If you have time to count how many were in the last 6 months, that's ideal. That's going to take a while. At least find a month and count how many came in that month. Don't just do a week. A week is not good enough because the numbers fluctuate so much from week to week. Get an entire month, count how many there are, and multiply that by six. That's gonna give you a pretty decent number of how many patients are coming back every 6 months. Now, there are some patients that are not going to be coming back for their recalls at exactly 6 months. So I do want you to take that into account. And so maybe don't times it by six, maybe times it by nine. Just to account that some patients are gonna come back at 6 months, some are gonna come back at 12 months, so we'll average that out by nine, you know, seven, eight, nine, kind of that kind of range. This isn't rocket science. Remember, the rocket science way is you stand, you count how many patients are coming in. This is an estimate, you're doing the best you can. Multiply it by eight or nine, that's gonna give you a decent idea of how many actual active recall patients there are at this practice. Now, you often don't get access to the schedule of a practice when you first look at it. Your first interaction with a practice is going to be receiving some documents through an email, usually from a practice broker, maybe from the seller, him or herself. So if you're getting documents from a seller, the main document you want to make sure you have is called the Production by Procedure Report. That's a report that's going to show all of the ADA codes, you know, D0120, D0180, etc. And it's going to list them all out, and it's going to show how many of each of those codes were done at that practice in the previous year, and what was the total production that was received from those codes. What you can now do is you can go in and you can look at the number of recall exams, the number of prophys, the number of child prophys, the number of perio maintenance appointments, the number of comp exams, the number of limited exams. And by looking at all of those numbers, you can get a pretty good estimate of how many patients were actually seen at that practice in the previous year. The first code I usually look at is D0120. That's the periodic oral evaluation, also known as a recall exam. That's probably going to give you your best estimate of how many recall patients were seen in the last year, because there are going to be some patients that were seen twice. Because remember, many patients come back every 6 months, some come back every year. So I like to divide that number roughly by 1.5 in order to get an idea of how many recall patients there were in the previous year. So let's say there were 2,000 D0120s done, 2,000 recall exams. You divide that by 1.5. So 2,000 divided by 1.5 gives you 1,333 active recall patients. I wouldn't just look at that number by itself, and the reason is not every dentist treats recall exams exactly the same. Some will do recall exams at every appointment. Some will only do them at 6 month mark. Some will only do them once a year, and the patient will come in for multiple prophys, maybe two prophys, and only get one periodic exam. Usually insurance covers them up to twice a year, once every 6 months. It depends on the insurance company. Keep in mind that if the patient is a perio maintenance patient, they might be coming back four times a year, but you can't count on that because they might come back the first two times to their appointment and then they drop off the schedule. So you just have to look at all the numbers and you have to kind of get an idea. There's no exact formula that you can follow because each practice is a little bit different. You have to look at the numbers and you have to actually try to kind of understand the business in order to actually see how many patients there were that are on the active recall list. But once you get a decent idea of how many patients there are, take the total revenue for the previous year and divide it by the number of recall patients. So in this example where we had 1,333 patients, let's say the practice was doing $1.2 million. That means the average production per patient was $906 per active recall patient. That's a reasonable number because, as we said, dentists are on average able to produce something like $700 to $1,000 per active recall patient per year. $906 per patient is what's within that healthy range. So if you're gonna buy a practice that is doing $1.2 million, you want to make sure that they have at least 1,200 active recall patients, because that puts you at the $1,000 per active recall patient number. If you can find a practice that has 1,200 active recall patients, but is only doing $600,000 per year, well now, instead of $1,000 per patient, they're only producing $500 per patient. You see what I'm saying here? So if you come in and you're able to do $1,000 per patient, the seller was doing $500 per patient, you are going to double production in the first year that you are working at this practice, assuming you don't do something else that runs the practice into the ground. If you find a practice that is only producing $500,000 per year, but there are 1,200 active recall patients, you're gonna look at the numbers and you're gonna say, oh, this practice probably isn't even worth looking at because it's not very profitable. The seller was only making $150,000 because the overhead is so high that it's not profitable. I'm gonna buy it and I'm gonna have $50,000 in loans each month. That'll be a lot, $50,000 in loans each year. And I'm only gonna make $150,000 minus that $50,000. I'm only gonna be walking away with $100,000 each year. I'm not gonna be making any money. I might as well just stay at my associate job at Aspen, at Heartland, at Pacific, where I'm making pennies on the dollar for my treatment. At least there I'm making $200,000 a year, but yeah, you're working 5 days per week, working extremely hard in order to make that much money. You are looking at the wrong thing. It doesn't matter how profitable the seller was. It matters how profitable you are going to be when you buy this practice. You can calculate how much you're able to produce per patient. If you have access to the numbers, you can calculate how much you are able to produce per patient at your associate job, and make sure you're taking into account that we're not talking about how much you personally are able to produce. We're talking about how much the total office you're working at is going to be able to produce. That includes work by hygienists. And if there's an associate, that includes work by that associate as well. So you have this practice that's only producing $500,000, but they have 1,200 active recall patients, I can guarantee you that seller was not doing very many crowns on these patients. I can guarantee you that seller was not placing implants, that seller was not doing any advanced endo, that seller was not treatment planning much at all per patient. If you have a patient coming two times a year for their recall exams, that's gonna be 200 to 250 per recall exam, which means $400 to $500 per patient per year just by coming for a recall exam. That's no treatment that you're doing. In order to get that patient up to $1,000 per year, all you have to do is one crown every other patient, or like two fillings per patient, you know, one bleaching tray per patient. You don't have to do that much work in order to get to $1,000 per patient per year. And so if the seller was only doing $500 or $600 per patient, you are going to be able to come in and grow this practice like crazy. You're gonna double it, you're gonna triple it without spending any money on Facebook ads, without spending any money on Google AdWords, without spending any money on hiring new staff and growing and doing anything crazy. All you're doing is you're just treatment planning better, and you're converting more of that treatment into paying customers. And usually the problem is not even the conversion. Usually the problem is simply that the seller was getting older, was getting tired, didn't want to do more crowns, didn't want to do more work, and was slowing down. Sometimes you'll come in and the office will have outdated radiograph equipment. I recently was looking at a practice. The practice didn't even have any standard tube heads, and the dentist was doing all of his diagnosis off of a pan, a film pan. Do you understand how low resolution a film pan from 1970 is going to be in comparison to today's digital bite wings? You are going to be able to find so much treatment at an office like that. Another example is I was working with a client at an office where the seller had not been doing crowns, but simply been patching old amalgam restorations. So this practice was filled with patients who had these old amalgams, MODBLs. The entire tooth was just this metal thing, which each year they would come in, the dentist would take out a round burr and add a little bit more amalgam and patchwork, and entire cusps were being replaced with this amalgam. Maybe over the recent few years, maybe they put some glass ionomer in there, you know. If you buy a practice like that, you are going to come in and day after day, there's gonna be patients coming in. Doc, my filling came out. Doc, I chipped my tooth. Doc, this tooth is broken. Doc, this tooth is hurting. There's going to be so much treatment. You're gonna be doing so many crowns because there's so much work left to do. Yet if you buy one of these super big profitable practices with only 300-400 patients, but the dentist was able to do $1.5, $2 million in these patients, none of the patients are going to need your treatment, and you are going to be sitting around doing pro fee checks while the seller is off on a beach somewhere taking the money that you bought his practice for and the money that he made by doing all those crowns on those patients. And he's going to be relaxing on the beach, and you're going to be sitting there in some old dental office doing the cleanings on those patients. Is that really why you became a dentist? So that you could pay some old guy to go on a vacation? I don't think so. I think you went to dental school so that you can actually make money for yourself, so that you can be the one going on those vacations and sitting on the beach. Don't buy a practice just because it was profitable. Do not fall for that trick. If you talk to an accountant, the accountant wants you to buy that practice because they want you to sign up for their service after you've bought the practice. So they're gonna be positive. They're gonna tell you what you wanna hear. If you talk to a banker, that banker is receiving a commission based upon the practice that you buy. Therefore, they want you to buy a bigger, more expensive practice, even though it's not the right practice for you, because they are going to receive a bigger commission when you buy a bigger practice. The same with a practice broker. The practice brokers are usually getting something like 10% of the purchase price. They want you to buy the biggest practice possible. They want you to pay the highest price possible. That's their business. They're trying to make money off of you. If you talk to a lawyer, the lawyer is going to tell you what you want to hear because that lawyer wants you to use them for their services to analyze the contracts to get ready for the sale. They don't want to tell you don't buy this practice because then you might go away and you might not come back. Their incentive is to tell you, yeah, you should buy this practice. Look, it was profitable. If you talk to any type of advisor that tells you you should buy a practice because it was profitable, they do not know what they are talking about and you should not listen to them. Should you look at profit? Sure, it's an interesting thing to look at, but you should not buy a practice because it was profitable. You should buy a practice because it has a high number of active patients. That's it. Active patients, ideally, that have not been over-treatment planned on. If you are interested in learning more about my process and how I evaluate practices and how I help dentists decide if a practice is worth buying, I have released a free practice evaluation checklist where we go through and we look at all of the numbers, all the things that you need to look at when you buy a dental practice. It's on my website. It's free. All you have to do is give me your email and I will give you 44 pages of free information on how to evaluate dental practices. I don't even know why I made this because I basically am giving away everything I know about buying a dental practice. People are probably not even going to sign up for my service anymore because there's so much information here. Check it out. I will put the link in the description. If you enjoyed this video, I think you will also enjoy this video where I talk about three different ways that you can make $500,000 a year as a dentist. And I think you'll be surprised. One way you're going to be working a lot in order to make $500,000. One way you're going to be working a lot less in order to make that $500,000. And the third way, you barely have to do any work at all and you're making $500,000 a year. So check out this video. If you have any questions, my email is in the description. You can check out my website. Reach out if you'd like any help looking at practices, and good luck.